This is Bringing the Darkness to the Light with Catherine Nadal, professional psychic medium.
Today's guest is Joseph Azzopardi from the band Upper Lip. It's a pleasure to have you on, Joseph.
Nice to meet you, Katie.
It's a
pleasure for me as well.
Thank you so much. Yes, I know. I'm very excited. I want to know more about this band. I'm not as familiar with this band, so I want you to tell me about your life. I want you to tell me about your albums. I want you to tell me about, in particular, your second album, which is called Devil's Ride. And that's the reason why I have you on the show today. So this is exciting. So tell me, number one, where you're from, how the band got together, how you grew up. Tell me the whole story.
So basically, I come from a small island in the Mediterranean, just beneath Sicily. It's called Malta. And I come from the sister island. It's called Gozo. It's part of Malta. So we're basically less than 500,000 people in population. We have many relatives in the US. So like in New York, even Canada, and all over the place. Basically, I form part of the band Upper Lip. We're a hard rock band, probably the only hard rock band that exists in Gozo, which is Malta's sister island. Basically, I have been in love with hard rock music since a very tiny age. You know, like it gives me energy and motivation, kind of. And that's why I decided to pursue this kind of thing. By profession, I'm a teacher, actually. I teach in a primary school in Malta. I also studied archaeology. So I have a varied academic, you know. I studied various things, you know what I mean?
Absolutely, yes. You know, I find it very interesting. I want to know about how, since you are a guitarist, how did you learn to get introduced to music? Is your family musical? Is anyone else talented? When did you pick that guitar up and know that that's something that you really can identify with?
So basically, my family is not musical at all. I believe they actually hate music. But since I was very young, you know, I used to stick rubber bands with two drawers and, you know, pretend I was playing. I actually started playing at a very late age. I started playing guitar when I was 16. But I always like tried to find the best teachers, and I was very willing and keen to learn. And I remember like watching bands and performing, and I said, that's what I want to do, you know. I used to go to band rehearsals, and I fell in love with the whole idea of being in a band, of writing your own songs. It's kind of, you know, like I cannot describe the feeling, you know, it's for me, it's something that changed my life to the good.
That to me is really interesting, especially since your family was not musical. And you said, like, really not even a fan of any kind of music. So that makes it even harder. You're probably much younger than me. But just for the audience's sake, what was a musical interest of yours? A lot of guys come on the show and they're like, oh, Kiss and Rolling Stones. And tell me the bands that you really kind of identified with that you really felt drawn to play the guitar.
The band that really changed my life was when a friend of mine gave me Led Zeppelin 4, the album. And when I placed it in the CD player, I completely, like, you know, like it's kind of, you see the light, you know. And then I fell in love, obviously, with AC/DC because I like the groove that they do. Guns N' Roses, of course. Then I went into studying Hendrix, Rory Gallagher, Jimmy Page, of course, from Led Zeppelin. And you know, you start buying magazines, guitar magazines, you know, trying to learn. You get obsessed with guitar magazines. You know, you start to pick it up, you know, slowly. But I always felt the need of education, you know, to find a good teacher. I had plenty. I had about 8 teachers, you know, until I found the right one.
Wow, I find that interesting. Very interesting, because here in America, we have something called School of Rock, where young musicians can, you know, join and sometimes be taught by people that have really played on stage or toured or, you know, so it's kind of available to them. For the fact that you came from a small island with not as many people as in New York City, how does someone go about finding a guitar teacher? Is that something that in your island, guitar is part of the culture?
Basically, you know that there's a, like, the guy from that band is playing, and okay, then maybe I should ask him if he's willing to teach me some chords or some stuff. And then obviously you learn about, when you start getting into the game, when you start hearing about that other guy, you know, and basically that's it. And if you're willing, you know, like I used to travel a lot to go, and like I remember when I was at university, like I had to, early in the morning, I used to go to a guitar lesson, and then I had to go and study archaeology later on. And I remember I failed that particular class because I used to write the notes rather than writing what I had to write, you know.
That's so interesting. Yeah. So for the fact that you are a educational teacher and you are teaching a class of students, do you feel that teaching guitar was something that you could do? Or do you really clearly separate that and say, I just want to play guitar, I don't want to teach it?
I teach guitar like privately, like I do private lessons. So actually my current teaching job is, you know, I have to teach them maths, English and all the other things. But I believe that teaching the instrument per se, you know, like you get to know the instrument more in detail, you know what I mean? So the fact that you have to teach guitar, kind of you have to study it as well. You have to go in real depth into it. And basically that's it. I still feel that I'm not, that I have a lot to learn, you know, like when you go on YouTube, you see a lot of, I don't know, Yngwie Malmsteen or Joe Satriani or Steve Vai, or it's like they're miles ahead, you know.
Yes, well, you just named some of the greats right there, and they happen to have a tour that's coming up in a couple of weeks. They're going to be out there on tour, Steve Vai and Joe Satriani together. And playing with them on their tour is my friend Marco Mendoza.
Yeah, so,
yeah,
heard of Michael,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, nice guy, very nice
guy.
He's
a bass player, right? He's a bass player.
Yes, correct, yeah. But he's going to be with them on their tour, which is super cool. So I wanted to talk about your band. I want you to introduce the band to the audience, tell us all their names, what positions they are in the band, and what they're like. You know, like I'm starting to hear your personality, but what are the other members like?
The singer, Chris Portelli, he's a mechanic by profession. And that's where we started rehearsing. We started rehearsing in his garage. He had a band before, and I used to go there, and I was kind of like, I never went in. I used to spy on them, you know, like I used to hear music. And then their guitarist left and I joined the band. And basically that was the beginning of Upper Lip, you know. Chris, he's a very good singer. He has the voice like, you know, like Bon Scott's, like sometimes like Axl Rose, sometimes like Robert Plant, kind of he's a mixture of them all, you know. And then there is the bass player as well, Marcel. Marcel, he is into jazz and that kind of thing. Now we're rehearsing in his place. He has an old bakery. So we're rehearsing in his bakery. It hasn't been used in 20 years, I guess, or more. So it's a cool spot. And sometimes when we post a video from his bakery, you know, like people drop comments and say, I need a loaf of bread or something like that. Or can you, jokingly, you know.
That's great. So who else is in the band?
Then we have Alex. He's the youngest member of the band. He's more of a session player, but because we always had some issues with drummers in the past, you know, like he's willing to stick to our rules, you know, so... And we're happy with him, kind of, because that's another thing. Finding drummers in Gozo is very difficult. We had like a drummer from Colombia once, an Italian drummer. He was really good. But, you know, sometimes they have to leave, you know, because they are, you know, foreigners. They have to go back to their country, you know, and it's a bit hard to start again, always starting again. So we decided to take the option of having a session player. The band is basically three people, but with this session player who is always with us. He's kind of part of the band as well.
That's great. So when did you actually put together your first album? And give us a little bit of history of what the first album's like for Upper Lip.
The first album was recorded in 2000, was released in 2021. It was recorded during the pandemic. We started recording it like a bit prior to the pandemic in 2018. I started writing the songs for it. The album, it's called Deep Within. Kind of it has an introspective approach. I was like, It's mostly about relationships I had, about, every kind of situation I was in, I wrote a song about it. And it has a lot of hope, kind of, as well. It's hopeful. It's different. I believe that the second album that we released, Dev Is Right, which we just released in March, it's a bit more darker themed, even the name Dev Is Right, The first album, I think, as a band who had never recorded, went to the studio where Rammstein recorded their most popular album in Malta, because Rammstein managed to record in Malta in 1991. And we recorded there. It's called Temple Studios. And at first he was going to throw us out, I said, what am I going to do with these kids, And basically, it was a challenge for him and we pulled it off, we recorded 11 songs and we got signed to a label in Germany. We distributed the album in America, all over the place. Now, basically, we released another album. It has 8 tracks. And as I said, it's a bit more darker themed. It's not about relationships. It's more about human nature. And I feel like the songwriting evolved a bit as well. The other album was more... It was more energetic in a way, but the songwriting was kind of, it chose a bit my initial approach. It was a kind of infancy and was still like beginning to get into it, It's still a good album, but now I feel that I've progressed, I've refined because I write all the songs. I wrote both the lyrics and the music, and obviously the producer has a big say as well, like how to go into it.
Wow. So you're super talented. I mean, that's a lot to handle the music plus the lyrics. Having the first album out, we have a lot of young musicians that listen to the show. How did it make you feel, especially thinking that you started out as a little boy putting rubber bands on like drawers just to hear the sound of the rubber bands? When you had that album in your hands, I mean, was it a dream come true?
Yeah, I was really proud, like when you hear a song, when you record it on your phone, like roughly on your, you work on it on your acoustic guitar, you record it on your phone, and then you have 20 other recordings on your phone of the same thing. And then you go and you record it professionally. You record it like you keep timing with the metronome, guitars are in tune, the drums is on point, and everything sounds good. It makes, sometimes you feel goosebumps. You say, well, this is really good now. You know what I mean? And the pity is that we don't get that exposure, because I do believe in the songs I write. You know what I mean? And sometimes it's very hard for a tiny band in the middle of the ocean, in the Mediterranean, to get out there. We don't get a lot of opportunities. And that's what we want. We want to kind of diverge, get a bit abroad, taste a bit international waters.
Yes, well, you will get attention with this show, that's for sure. It's interesting because I'm looking at the information that I have in front of me about the second album, Devil's Ride. It was produced by David Vella. Tell us about David.
He's the same producer that produced the first album. He's a very, very, very talented person. He worked all over the place, even worked with Steve Lombardo, I believe, from Slayer. Yeah. So he's very, very talented, and he's also very strict. So he has like golden ears and he can hear everything, like if the guitars are out of tune, he can pinpoint them precisely. Like he's a drummer, he's a very good drummer, and he's an easy guy to work with. And he kind of pushes you to do your utmost. So you're there, you kind of have to work hard, and the product shows that it's really done well,
How long did it take to record Devil's Ride?
Devil's Ride, from the songwriting and everything, it took about 2 years, because we had some issues also. We had to use another drummer because we had some issues with the previous drummer. And basically, the drummer that we used to do the drum parts, he's the drummer from Tyrion, and he also toured with Opeth. He's a very, very good Finnish drummer. He's a session player. His name is Sami Karppinen. So it's not our actual drummer that recorded on the record. It's this guy, Sami Karppinen, and he's like a top-notch musician. He's like up there, We're here, he's there. And he really elevated the whole record, you know. And as I said, this is a more kind of dark themed. It speaks about, you know, like sometimes you get deluded by people who should be doing good things and they actually do the opposite, you know. It has themes from the church as well, you know, like Malta is a very like Catholic country. Like religion is a big thing here. And sometimes you don't expect it from people who should be doing good and are in these positions. They do the opposite, you know what I mean? And it reflects that thing as well.
Yes, well, that's part of human nature, I guess, right?
Yeah.
So I want to start talking about several songs that are on this second album of yours called Devil's Ride. The first song I want to bring up, and I've listened to all of them, and I really love them. The first song that I want to bring up is called The Duel.
Yeah.
And that one I actually made a little note about because when I was listening to it, I said, wow, this sounds like a cowboy song. Like
yeah.
It almost has like a country vibe to it or kind of a rockabilly. What do you think?
Yeah, it has that kind of vibe. It puts you like if you're somewhere in Arizona or somewhere like that in the desert. And it's the duel is kind of like that. It's the duel between like sometimes your own mind, you know, what goes up in your mind, in your head. Like it's not as essentially about good or bad. It's about your own battles that you have inside your head, you know. And sometimes people, unfortunately, you know, mental health and everything is this little box that we have here. We need to kind of take care of it. And it's about that. Like, and it's also positive in a way because it ends up on a positive note, you know, like even the chorus, it kind of lifts the song and basically that's it. That's what the duel, it's about that. It's about your inner battles, your inner battles, which goes like people suffer from these things, you know, a lot.
Yes. And it's so true. A lot of times, it is the struggle. Sometimes it's not struggling with other people, but it's struggling with ourselves. You know, we could be very hard on ourselves, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like we're dueling with our own self, fighting with our own selves, you know?
Yeah, overthinking.
Overthinking is a big one for everyone.
Yes.
Good. So we're going to listen to The Duel now.
Sickness spreads like a plague in wound, hides in
Wow. You know, I'm really very impressed with your band because all of the songs, even though you described it to be a bit darker than your first album, the songs do sound different, which is something I always look for because you want to be able to not just have your favorite song, but you want to be able to recognize the band. Like, yes, that's Upper Lip. Like, I don't need to see the cover of that or the song title. You know, when you turn it on the radio or you turn on YouTube, you know it, you know? So that's really great. The song I wanted to bring up is called Won't You Listen? Tell me about that song and what is that about?
Won't You Listen? It's a song I wrote about, I got inspired by my father and by other people who are a bit stubborn. You know, sometimes you give advice to somebody and sometimes I get advice as well. And it's basically about like, won't you listen? Like, why don't you pay heed to genuine people who try to, who want the best of you, you know? It's about like trying to improve yourself and trying to find reason when things seem desperate, you know, when everything seems sad or when you're anxious or where you think about always thinking about bad things, you know. It's basically about that. And that's why won't you listen? And the verse goes, why won't you listen to me? Something like that. I forgot right now what I wrote. And it's kind of like moving on, trying to find peace and not get stuck. Sometimes we do get stuck. It affects us. It affects the people around us. And we have to kind of weed out, not everybody who gives us advice is, you know, has good intent, but there are some people who actually are genuine and we should actually listen to these genuine people who really want the best for us.
So true. Can you tell us, what is the song heavily on? Some songs are heavy on the drums or heavy on, you know, tell me what the song feels like to you. So if you had to take away all the lyrics, how would you be able to describe the song for what instruments seem to take, you know, center stage?
It's kind of like a ballad. So the guitars, like even the instrumentation in the beginning, it develops. The song is like a story. It keeps on developing. And it has two solos. I'm obsessed with putting solos with two different guitars. I remember the first one, I used the Telecaster, then I used the Gibson. And it shows, it's a bit different. So, yeah, it's kind of like, I always try to put a ballad in an album. I don't know why, but I have to put a ballad.
Because people like them, that's why.
Yeah. And it's my favorite. It's the most favorite song, my most favorite song in the album.
Won't You Listen is your favorite song. All right, great. Well, let's take a listen. We're going to play now, Won't You Listen by Upper Lip.
So hard to see.
You know, it's I always love speaking with songwriters, especially since you describe you're the only one in the band that's been really responsible with this task. So it's really a personal feeling, this album, to you. I mean, you're like the father, the mother, the children of the whole band, because you really kind of authored it in some sort of way. There's another song, and you're right, because the songs are very different. When I listened to The Castle, I felt like I just wanted to play it again and again. So tell me why I felt like I wanted to keep hitting, like, repeat on The Castle. What is it in that song that kind of makes me want to just keep hitting play?
The Castle, I think it's the heaviest song in the album. It has elements from Black Sabbath in it. And it also has a Vincent Price talking part. A friend of mine, his name is Bob. He's from England. He did like he's into theater. I tried to do it myself, but I don't have that accent, that British accent. And he really nailed it. And I think it's a very, like, the composition of the song, it first started as an instrumental track. It started as an instrumental track and we were going to keep it like that. But then a friend of mine, his name is Michael Iverson, he used to be the producer, the organizer of Sweden Rock Festival. And he used to live in Gozo. Now he's going back to Sweden. He told me, Joe, you should write lyrics for this song. You know, like... go write lyrics for the songs, and that's what I did. The song is basically, if you put it in a vampire movie, it would really work, you know, because the lyrics are kind of like going, there's a beast, you know, you're gonna go and get the beast, you know. It's kind of, there is a kind of like a narrative going on. And The Castle speaks about, it also speaks about a real person in my mind, you know. I don't know, it feels like this album, I had a lot of grudges about people and I put them up. But again, it's about a real person who should be doing good things, but actually they're doing the opposite, you know? It basically is reflective of that. I personify this person into a beast, you know?
Yes, well, I love horror. I love monster movies. You know, I love Halloween and I love heavy metal. So no wonder why I wanted to keep hitting repeat on The Castle over and over again. It makes total sense now. So the audience that knows me, they know why I just want to hit repeat. So we're going to listen together to The Castle by Upper Lip.
Glowing in the pitch black dark, a twisted smile tale that haunts the night. A serpent's deadly mark. He weaves his schemes in silence with a hunger deep and raw. And every soul that dares to cross becomes his bloodstained law.
So interesting. Before we get to another song, I wanted to kind of see what the kind of the movement of the band is. When you get together, what do you talk about as next steps? The album was released the past month or two. The album's going to be out there, social media. What would the band like to see happen in the future?
Basically, we want to get like more opportunities, like, as I said, abroad. It's not that we don't like to play in our own hometowns, you know, but there is a limit how many gigs you can do in the same place, you know. So we basically want to play abroad, get our music out there. And yes, nowadays, like being on social media and promoting your work, it's kind of part and parcel with the music. It's not just about music anymore. Sometimes you have to act funny, you have to, you know, like put clips out there. It's part of the game nowadays. But basically, our biggest intent is to get out there. We're participating also in a big battle competition, metal battle. We could play in Wacken if we win in May. So we're doing our best. So that would be a big opportunity for us, playing in Wacken, which is the biggest festival in Germany, you know. So we'll see.
Yes, I'm very familiar with it. We actually have tryouts for it here in Brooklyn in New York. So there's a lot of bands that go up for that. And some of my friends are actually, they're judges at the Wacken
Battle.
The Battle of the Bands is what I call it. Yeah. You know, it's so interesting because a few times that I've attended that in Brooklyn, I walked out of there and I'm like, I don't know how anybody could pick the best one because I think they're all great. And all the bands that go up, they've all been playing. I mean, it's not like most of them are not new bands. I mean, they're all experienced bands. You know, they have local following. So that's important too. The stage has to be familiar to you in order, you know, to think you could play, you know, a festival as big as that one in Germany, you know. So that's great. Wow, very good. So other than that, hopefully, fingers crossed, you get into that one. Is there any other things other than social media that you would like to see for the future of the band? Like, do you see another album?
Yeah, definitely. And maybe like reproducing a vinyl now, because we never did a vinyl before. So maybe that's in the pipeline. I don't know if we're going to do this as vinyl as well. We only did CDs for Devil's Ride. We were thinking about actually like producing vinyl for it as well. And basically, I will write songs for the next album now, for the third album. I haven't got like a trajectory yet. I don't know where I'm going with the third album. But yeah, I have to start thinking about it as well. Basically, that's it. We keep on writing songs until we make it. So,
yes, and I give you credit because it does, number one, take a lot of time. And number two, it takes a lot of dedication. So, you know, I'm sure our listeners realize that you're completely in love with music, but you're also very dedicated to sharing music. And you've already touched on some of the songs really do reflect on how people have a daily struggle. And a lot of those songs and the songwriting that you've written, you know, talks about the day-to-day challenges that people go through. Mental health is really one of the top conversations, as it should be, around the world. And I think the pandemic, like you had mentioned earlier, the pandemic really brought the awareness of mental health to everyone's realization that you need to have conversation and you need to have the ability to feel that you can share something freely because, you know, there's no place for judgment. A lot of times over the years, I mean, you could go back and pick up an album that goes back to Ozzy Osbourne or before, where a lot of issues were brought up very freely in the lyrics, where a lot of young people could identify with. And yeah, that's the power of it, not just talking about something fun all the time, but, you know, dealing with heartache and dealing with pain and dealing with sometimes substance abuse, which is written throughout a lot of lyrics. And depression, being alone, and things like that are very often addressed there. So I give you a lot of credit for that. You're either drawing on personal experiences or public experiences. Sometimes you just hear a story in the news and you're drawn to write a story about it. That is so true. So that is great. A lot of the things that I've come across that have been written about Upper Lip talks about the energy of the band. And it talks about the creativity of the band, and it talks about the depth of the band. And when you have adjectives like that, and you have like really detailed information about how the band is being taken by other people, it's really a compliment. So, you know, you said the first album was something that was just like an introductory. The second one was a bit of a, you know, horror, scary. So I can't wait to see what this third one's going to be about, you know? That's going to be interesting.
I haven't got a clue yet.
Oh, you don't? You don't? See, I don't know. Sometimes when a band writes something, they say, oh, like this suits me. Writing kind of more horror or darker stuff may come naturally. And then that may be something that formulates a pattern or kind of like a trend in the band. Where, yeah. So you'll have to, we'll be watching you. We'll be watching to see what happens next. The last song that I wanted to bring up is called The Blood of Rock and Roll. That's a big title there. So tell me all about that one.
Blood of Rock and Roll. It's like the energy. It also has symbolic connotations with, you know, religious artifacts like a chalice, you know, like blood, and it's kind of rock and roll for us who are into this kind of music. Is it gives us the power, you know, the motivation to keep moving on, especially coming from an island like ours, where unfortunately I would say we don't get the respect that we deserve, you know, because sometimes we, because of our music, you know, they say, oh, it's too loud or it's noisy or, you know, it's not my thing, you know. And we do feel sometimes sidelined as well, like, and which is fine, you know. It's good to write songs about this. And basically it speaks about that, and kind of like rock and roll is kind of like blood. And the whole album, you know, like vampires, blood, you know, like it is reflective of this. Blood of Rock and Roll is the most energetic track on the album. It's very punchy. The riff is very punchy. I like the harmonies of the guitars at the end. It's really, really great. That was an idea by David, our producer, to do, and the chants in the middle. So it's quite, I think it's a good track, you know.
So great. Very good. So tell me about your social media. I want you to be able to plug your social media, tell everyone where they can find the band and any websites or anything that you have so they can stream your music.
So we have our website, upperlipmusic.com, our Facebook page, Upper Lip, Instagram page, Upper Lip Rocks, our Spotify links, and all the other main links, you know, for streaming. But obviously, we would prefer you buy the album rather than... You can stream it as much as you like, but if you buy the album, it would be really helpful for the band.
So great. Well, it has been a pleasure to have you on. I am looking forward to hearing more about Upper Lip Band. And everyone needs to check out the second album, Devil's Ride. We're going to roll out with the blood of rock and roll. It's been a pleasure to have you on, Joseph. Thank you again.
Thank you, Katie.
Thank you.
Yeah!
You have been listening to Bringing the Darkness to the Light with Catherine Nadal, professional psychic medium, Dream Central Station, LLC. My audio editor is Al Hemberger at the Loft Recording Studios in Bronxville, New York. This is WNEW 102.7 FM radio.